You're listening to Around Comics, episode 197.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by, like all of these wonderful people. We haven't had a crowd like this in forever. This is
it's a legitimate peanut gallery.
I know. I was worried this week because Tom Caters is gone, and so I had like one seat to fill in addition to our regular two. So I started.
So how many people did you ask?
50.
like five, and we had like 15 people. Yeah, Jenny.
It takes five people to replace Tom Caters.
You darn right it does.
Sure. No. And a goat.
No. Darn.
And a goat. And livestock.
Exactly. Big shoes.
Anyway, I'm Christopher Niesman, and sitting in for Tom, we have a great panel today. First of all, is longtime friend of the show and our buddy Mr. Mike Norton. How you doing?
Hi. I should have got three of these.
Mike is drinking booze out of a paper sack.
He's talking about his tall boy there.
Yes, it is.
Next is the Charlie Rose of comic book podcasting, Mr. John Suntress.
How do you feel, Hill, sitting next to the Charlie Rose of podcasting? Casting, you excited?
As long as we're not betting on comics, we're okay, right,
excellent.
Steve?
No, absolutely not. No.
The voice of Word Balloon, Mr. John Suntress.
Hi, everybody.
Hello again, everybody. The Cubs are doing great this season.
Don't get me started.
All right, then.
Talk to a Cardinal fan here. Next is one of our favorite past guests. We talked to you, it's probably been over a year ago. It's been way too long. Way too long. And we got so much fan mail to get Hillary Barta back on the show. So,
you got to go
Mrs.
get him.
Barta.
Where is he?
Hillary? Wait, I thought it was a girl.
Yeah, really? We're all disappointed that one of that.
I've had my doubts on occasion.
Hillary, welcome aboard.
Time in prison, it doesn't mean you're gay, okay? It just means you have limited options.
Wachowski.
Yeah. Whoa.
So, moving on to Andrew Kudelka.
Hello.
Mr. Kudelka from last week is back with us. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Feels like last week, doesn't it?
Feels like last week, yeah.
By an eternity.
If I have another one of these, this will be feeling like next week.
Well, this will be good. We got the ornery drunk.
I know exactly what I said. I'm not drunk.
Yeah. He's not ornery. He's not ornery. He said he was feeling overexposed. I know this is, similar to
this
radio.
Is my translator.
It's only audio.
It is all that.
What's that, Mike?
I sent my translator Hillary over here.
Yeah, you're going to be like the 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm the U.
It's not a good thing to be,
yeah,
Mike.
The U. Where's the Jim Beam? Break it out.
He's got it.
I know you got it. Of course you got it.
There you go.
He's got the hip flask.
I'm going to have a little.
We'll get into a discussion on why Jack Daniels
is
better.
It's like it's the 20s.
I started it. No,
you just really,
let's just get into comics.
All right.
Everybody has to take a swig now.
There you go.
Pass it around the table.
All right. Speaking of comics, a great way to and a great place for you to buy your comics is at InStockTrades.com, and this episode is sponsored by them. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And right now, InStockTrades.com is offering our book club. We're not calling it the Club of the Month book club because we do it about every 6 weeks. So they're
off this club.
You're lazy.
Hey, can we do a promo for Jim Beam now?
Sure, it's tasty.
I've done commercials for Jim
Dempster.
Truly.
Really? 40%
goes down smooth, that Jim does.
That's right.
Our club, our book club book is Charles Burns' Black Hole. We've been talking about this for about 2 years. Finally time. Finally time.
It's our book of the month club that we were talking about for
years. It's a comic book,
we're
right?
On page six.
No. Well, no.
We've been talking about doing an episode dedicated to this book for about 2 years, so now is the time, and you can pick that up at InStockTrades.com. You got about another week before we do our episode. You can get it for 35% off the cover price, and the soft cover is $11.67, or the really beautiful hardcover is $16.22 right now. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free.
Do you have that memorized now?
Just about.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yep. So, I got
you're good.
Think about, and I don't want to go on and on about it. InStock Trades is a great sponsor, not just for us, but for a lot of other comic book podcasts.
Here, here.
So if you enjoy listening to comic book podcasts, support InStock Trades because they support most of the podcasts that you listen to.
Damn Skippy.
Absolutely. The good people there, too. All right, well, guys, we got a lot to talk about, but obviously the big thing that has come out in the last couple weeks is Robert Kirkman's kind of manifesto that he put out on CBR, this 9-minute video speech that my first impression of it is that it was Mike's like cracking up.
No, go ahead.
My first impression of it is that it struck me as being very genuine. It was obviously not scripted. It was from the heart, and I think that he would admit that there were good points and great points that he made, but I felt that it was extremely genuine, and so I really appreciated the message that he was trying to convey, because I really think it comes from the heart and something that he really believes in, and that is his stance on creator-owned works and their importance to the longevity and long-term health of the comic book industry. So we have John here, who had the benefit of talking with Kirkman at length after this was released. So folks that haven't checked out his Word Balloon episode, definitely go and do that. But you know, kind of your first impressions, and as you so eloquently do, kind of encapsulate what Kirkman's message was on this little 9-minute video.
Well, fact check me if I get it wrong, but basically, like you said, he's telling people that are name creators at this point that are working exclusively in Marvel and DC should truly stop working for the mainstream and get into doing their own creator stuff. They've got a built-in audience. People come for their stories. Why waste any more time now that you've established yourself working for the big two? Get out there and create your own book. And he said the threshold isn't as high as you might think. He got into specific numbers on my show and said Walking Dead makes, you know, it's 25,000 copies per month. Invincible is 15,000 copies per month. And he said, I make a good living from that. And obviously, as a, you know, commercial creator, the guy has been able to take those ideas and exploit them in other media. Invincible is enjoying success now on MTV. He's got some, I know, deals in the works for Walking Dead. So, yeah, Kirkman's got the magic touch and is saying, jump in, the water is fine. He's also suggested that if there were truly a mass exodus from DC and Marvel, what would happen to the two companies? He is suggesting that rather than focusing on adult fans in their 20s and 30s, to get back to doing what got us into comic books and aim books at the teen audience. And maybe, you know, kind of tone down some of the darker stories that have been successful for DC and Marvel of late, but again, geared to a more adult audience. And he just said that those kid imprints like Marvel Adventures and Johnny DC, kids are wise enough to know that that's not the real versions of the heroes, just like when we were kids. I mean, he pretty much put it, he goes, those are side versions of mainstream characters. Am I missing anything? Those are the big things.
Those were a lot of the big points that he had. And we've got a, you know, on the panel today, we've got on the panel today, we've got a nice collection of people that work mainstream comics, and, you know, Mike is exclusive to DC. Hillary has a long career career in working both mainstream and creator-owned books. You know, Andrew's worked in comics and sees other industries that affect and are affected by comics in the video game industry. So, you know, I think we can get some different, you know, opinions and thoughts on you know, what's going on. What really is good for comics, I guess, is what the question that Kirkman is raising. You know, long-term viability for comics, is it, you know, in all that story, how important are creator-owned comic books to the long-term viability of the comics industry?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, isn't Superboy now partly owned by this family of...
The Sagals.
The Sagals?
Yes.
So, Superboy is now a creator-owned book.
Yes, well, 70 years later, but yes.
But, I mean, everything was created by somebody.
Right.
And in the perfect world, you know, we would all own everything we ever drew. If we worked in, you know, legitimate publishing, not comic books, you write a book, you own it. They buy the first, you know, rights to it, North American, whatever. They print it, the rights revert back to the author. Not so in comics. And, you know,
even some deals that initially started off that way, in principle, didn't end up like that, with case in point, Alan Moore and The Watchmen, right?
Well, let's not get sidetracked in that, because that's...
Please. Sorry, Hal.
No, that's a very particular case, but yeah, I mean, we could get into that, sure. I don't...
You want to do that?
No. I'm sorry.
I'll let Alan... No, don't apologize. Alan can speak for himself. But I think that's been kind of gone over. I don't know. I think Eric Larson did something similar recently, too.
Yeah,
he basically threw the gauntlet on the table and said, guys, come on,
not
what the hell are you waiting for?
But no, yeah.
No, but maybe not as politely, but yeah. Maybe, you know, even more directly. I don't know if I'm the best guy to speak for this, because I don't have a creator-owned book out there, but it's great. It's what everybody should do. It would be the perfect world. It seemed to me, Kirkman, you're speaking of Kirkman, mm-hmm. What he was saying two things. What's good for the industry and the creators?
Yes.
It could be the same thing. You know,
that's
you
exactly
could do the book that will help comics and help the future. It's new products, new ownership, new ideas, new energy. Plus, you own that. You control it. You get a piece of it. The biggest piece. The whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think something that works for the industry and against it is that you have kids that grow up as artists or aspiring writers, and they have such an affection for these characters. And, you know, Mike has talked about it before. I mean, your love of Beetle and of Spider-Man, when you grew up wanting to draw those characters.
Yeah.
I mean, was that always kind of the, you know, the end of the rainbow for you?
I don't think I'm necessarily the person to ask. I mean, I know there are more people like me working in comics, but yeah, when I grew up, I mean, as I was growing up, I wasn't thinking, oh yeah, I got this character like Spawn and I'm going to make my mark with it, and I'll eventually have my own comic, it'll be as good as Stan Lee's creations ever, you know, like that. No, I wanted to draw Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I got to draw Spider-Man. Yay for me.
I have one of the pages.
But I mean I do have my own ideas, but there's reality out there too, that I realize that it's freaking hard to do that stuff. Even I was asking John earlier today, I'd like to know how well like something like Gray Area did for John Romita Jr., arguably one of the most popular artists ever.
Mm-hmm.
How well did his creator-owned book do?
I know he's got another one in the works,
so
I agree with you. Yeah, that is.
I would like to know that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with most of what Robert was saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, but you know, you said that you may not be like, you know, some people, but I think that you are like a lot of the artists out
there. Well, there are a lot of quote unquote company men,
mm-hmm.
but I think a lot of them have their own thing that they want to do. I have my own thing that I'd like to do too, but I've held back on it just because, for one thing, I mean. There's a little bit of like self-confidence there, mm-hmm. and then there's a little bit of, I don't think anybody's going to buy this if I actually do it, you know, that kind of attitude, you know.
That was my concern with Robert.
Because records have shown otherwise, I mean, it's easy to see when, easy to think when you see something like Robert saying, which is something that's basically the truth, you know. Mm-hmm. And like Hillary said, Eric's already said this stuff, to look at him and say, well, Robert, you're like one of like 20 people I can think of that's able to do what you're doing right now. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you were doing well before you were at Marvel. You know what I'm saying? He was making a pretty good living off his own thing, which
Robert
never happened.
He is the success story.
Yes.
You look at a book like Walking Dead and why he is a fairly unique creator to who's out there right now. Walking Dead increases in sales.
Right.
Whenever trades, which increase in sales every time they come out, when a trade comes out, you see a spike in the single issues. That doesn't happen for anyone else in the industry right now. So I think there's a perception by people out there that, well, this is an easy statement for him to make. You know, he's in the catbird seat.
It is, but it doesn't make anything that he's saying less true.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he's not doing it from a point. He really wasn't being arrogant.
No, not at all.
For people who only saw the video,
if
you heard
people
the video,
have a comic they want to do and they're not doing it because they're afraid, that's dumb. If they're doing it,
if they're
working at Marvel or DC or wherever, and they're making a living and they're happy and they're comfortable with that, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
People like pump gas for a living. You know, I mean, you're making a living, that's fine. You're drawing comics, that's better. You know,
but Robert's point too was, though, there's a window of popularity when you put your work in the mainstream, and if you devote all your energy to that and don't develop these creator-owned ideas yourself, you're doing yourself a disservice, and as he pointed out on my interview, there is no benefit plan at the end of the rainbow. It's, you're no longer popular, you're work for hire, thank you for your service, see you later.
And honestly, most artists have a certain window of energy, too.
Sure.
Their creative juices are usually when they're younger.
Well,
and
of course,
you reach a certain age, and
hey man,
I haven't reached it yet, but you're probably, you know, when I was growing up,
John Byrne was the cat's meow. I mean, John Byrne did a book, and it was flying off shelves.
John's a brand name, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Raj 2000.
Sure.
You know what?
No, that's when I was reading John Byrne. That's how old I am.
I remember Raj 2000.
I was buying Charlton John Byrne off the stands.
I remember Raj 2000.
But John Byrne comics don't sell like that.
No.
You know, now, he did his creator-owned work. He did Next Men. Mm-hmm. And so he tried to take advantage of that.
But they're like cult classics at best.
Yeah.
But also, he was at war with all the Image guys. I mean,
around the same time.
Yeah, I don't have the inside track on that, but, you know, it's like...
Well, when he did Next Men, they had the Legend imprint, and you had Madman and Hellboy and Sin City, and those are pretty big success stories there for creator-owned stuff.
Yep.
You know, I think when Kirkman thinks of other creators, I think Mignola is a perfect example of what he's talking about.
He cited Mike in my interview, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, here you go. You've got a guy that was working, you know, DC, the Cosmic Odyssey, which is awesome. Go and pick that up. You know, but if Mignola had taken the track that most artists and writers do of work your way up through an indie, start, you know, climbing your way up the ladder, and my goal is to do JLA or Amazing Spider-Man, then Mignola may be doing, you know, X-Men or Spider-Man now, but we wouldn't have Hellboy. And he did his own thing. And imagine comics today without Hellboy.
Hollywood without Hellboy.
Yeah, it's a huge corner of the comics market. It's very important. So I think that is probably the challenge that he's throwing out there, is to not be afraid to do that.
Right, but again, the problem is there are a bunch of creators who have developed wonderful creator-owned books that were really unique and really were great and haven't reached the threshold that Kirkman has as far as sales. And, you know, again, he also said it wasn't only about the money, it's also about personal, you know, creator satisfaction of doing your own thing. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's, hey, the reality is in the workforce, there's health benefits, there's security, and, you know, and knowing that you're going to make more money you know, writing or drawing Spider-Man than doing your own
book.
Call those
the golden handcuffs.
Yeah, sure. Well, and he even
now
said
we're
in
back
minor,
in prison again.
Well, with Hillary. No, but, you know, he even said the people that are straddling and doing both mainstream books and creator-owned at the same time, mm-hmm. he feels they're doing themselves a disservice because at the end of the day, in his example, if you're writing Spider-Man and you're doing your own creator-owned book, the kids are always going to go to Spider-Man first, and, you know, it's always going to outsell what you're trying to do. If you're enough of a brand name, put all your focus in the creator-owned book, and
that's kind of unfair.
It's the reality.
One of the reasons I brought up Superboy is not just to, you know, rub it in DC's face, whatever that is. Whoever's face is DC's face. No, it's just those characters came from somewhere. Mm-hmm. Those characters were created at one time. I mean, we have a marketplace with established characters, but if a movie comes out and it's called Hellboy, a kid today doesn't know the difference between Spider-Man and Hellboy. He doesn't know which character came first.
Sure.
And if it's a completely original character that was created 2 weeks ago and it's now a comic and it could be a movie or whatever, if it's cool, if it's out there, you know, if they can find it, it could succeed. You'll never know until you do it.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean everyone has to do it. It doesn't mean everyone has to do it now. It doesn't mean you can't do both. Or
no, I was agreeing.
Okay. What he said. Should I continue translating?
Yeah, Mike? Go ahead.
Mike said, "Rrr."
Warren Ellis, I think, is an example of somebody who I personally think is kind of wearing himself a little thin when he starts doing a lot of extra work on the site. I mean, Freak Angels, there's a few good exceptions mm-hmm. that he's done that I like. But I still think when I read all his work outside of the popular stuff that he's done, it's some of it just keeps repeating his ideas, and it just kind of gets watered down a bit. And, I mean, I love the new Universal stuff he's done. I don't know if you're a fan of that. I know you had an opinion about that before. But I think that he doesn't really focus. He's juggling so many hats for sale.
Hats for sale.
Hats for sale, Jenny. Hats for sale, that's my joke.
but he does, I think that's one of the points that Kirkman's trying to make, that he's kind of watering himself down by not focusing enough on some of the stuff he's done on the side.
Andrew Kudelka.
Thank you.
Speaking about Warren Ellis.
Thank you.
Well, you know, your industry, you work in the video game industry, and it's work for hire, correct?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you work for them, but a lot of it is work for hire.
Yeah, contractually, yeah.
It's like working in an agency or working for a comic book company. It's like whenever you go to work at Midway, and the work that you do whenever you sit down at your desk at the end of the day is theirs.
Yeah, pretty
you're not,
much.
You're not taking...
I'm on their clock, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of that is the same for working for a comics company.
Yeah, and when I get home, I want to work on other personal work, but I'm usually burnt out, and I mean, you're trying to push every last ounce of energy and vitality that you have in order to get that work out, but I mean, it's hard to just juggle all these different, you know, pieces. I mean, some of it's going to suffer.
Hats. Juggling hats.
You know,
for sale.
Remender is now starting to get some mainstream work. Remender from both Marvel and DC mm-hmm. has a nice backlog of great creator-owned concepts and books, and literally has like a bookshelf full of trades that he can point to, and I think is in a perfect position now to go into the mainstream and work on that stuff, build his name, and kind of pull what Brian Bendis did and say, great, now you're comfortable with me doing stuff in the mainstream. Why don't you check out exactly what I got here on the back bookshelf? Here's a bunch of, you know, things that I've also done.
And I hope it would kill me if Remender...
Come on, Tim, in over here.
Tim's
got opinions.
Tim said
he's a contrary opinion.
It's Jim Seeley, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, no. Please. I don't mean to disagree.
No, I'm glad, Tim. This is what we want you to do.
Disagree,
sure.
I've
been talking too much. When I want to talk, believe me, I'll talk.
No, what
so, it's it's like a hockey game. We now have
second shift.
Andrew has shift to right wing, and Seely is now in on defense for Hillary Barda.
Scoring position. Chris, where's the beer?
The beer
behind
is
the counter?
Behind the counter.
And Hillary has given himself a penalty and is sitting in the box drinking.
Yeah, the next shift will be Jason Malay and Jenny Frizen.
So. Oh, I come in too.
All right, so Tim, you had a point.
Well, if only because I've done it backwards. I started out in Creator-Owned in a way because though I did, I mean, I started out drawing G.I.
Don't
Joe
say it's backwards because that's how Robert started.
Yeah, that's
sure
what most people
but
start.
But I, no, I mean, well, on the other hand, though, I did do G.I. Joe. I mean, it's not like I
right
didn't do a company book.
No,
I did a company book.
Right.
But okay, so. I start out writing a creator-owned book, right? Nobody hires me to do writing outside of my creator-owned book. That's the way it goes. But they hire me to do art because I built my name on art doing G.I. Joe, which sure I don't fucking own.
Right.
So if you look at it that way, I mean, like, really, my creator-owned work hasn't gotten me any help at all. It hasn't done anything for me.
You have a very... I would say that your outlook is more practical,
sure,
I would say, than most.
But you're talking about making a living. Like, look,
right,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, selling a movie deal is not a living. It's help.
Yeah,
you know, it's nice.
Exactly.
It's
you
not
live
a living
for most of a year, maybe.
No, you no. you know, I mean,
well, I'm
once they start the movie, maybe you'll.
That's
live
what I'm
off
saying.
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But when you get an option, that you can't live off that.
No, I've had options.
You know,
I paid rent for a month.
Right, right, sure. So the reality of it is, though I appreciate a lot of the sentiment, I think there's a little bit of idealism going in there. And if anybody can tell you, it would be me, because I've done image creator-owned books, and I've
sure
done other creator-owned books, and I think it's the way to go. I think it's a more freeing experience, but sort of casting out to guys who may not necessarily be prepared to deal with the reality of it, doesn't. I think people are company men, and there are people who aren't. And if you can put up with the reality of doing a book where, you know, I mean, it's your book, but you generally are trying to sell it to everyone, no matter what you do. And it doesn't really matter if you wrote the Hulk or whatever you did, unless you directly go from the same genre to another. Let's say you're Jeff Loeb and you wrote Hulk, and then you're like, I'm gonna do a creator book. Unless you did something pretty much like Hulk, how are you going to sell that
right
to people?
Right, right,
right. Well, I turn around like I did G.I. Joe. How many people do you think I sold Hack Slash to directly after I did G.I. Joe? I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
It's not a lot. And you know,
two different audiences.
It's two different audiences.
Well, creatively for you, and this is, I think, what it comes down to a lot. You know, of course it is money. It's paying rent. It's buying groceries. It's,
sure,
it's making sure that you don't, you know, live in a box down by the Chicago River. But creatively, what is more fulfilling for you to do something like Loaded Bible or Hack Slash, but now you're doing, can we talk about your new
stuff?
Well,
I'm working on the Marvel stuff. And
okay.
I mean, I'm doing some art for some Marvel stuff. It's the most completely different game that you could ever play.
And I have a feeling it feeds you in two very different,
but
equally fulfilling ones.
But I mean, it's different, obviously, you know, like a guy like Robert or a guy like Ed Brubaker, they're doing the same job. I mean, the one is writing, they're writing it, you know, and then if they're doing creators, they're writing it. I'm doing a completely different thing. I write creator-owned stuff. When I draw company stuff,
mm-hmm,
probably a different game. I mean, realistically, we're talking about drawing, which I can treat very technically.
Yeah,
basically treat
it's
it as
kind
an
of
execution.
A different thing. Yeah,
right. I can treat drawing as literally like, hey, give me a piece. You know, give
you're
me instructions.
Going, you're going to the origin when you're writing stuff because you're
right
creating it from the base.
It's actually creating. It's actually making shit
yeah
up from.
You can be
the
very
chaos
technical
right
when it's just drawing. Yeah,
drawing,
sure. Give me whatever you want.
Right. It could be
yeah
any damn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've illustrated, you know, medical fucking manuals. That's
yeah
fine.
Exactly.
It's a job, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's obviously a slightly different job. And I believe Rob's call out was more to writers because.
I agree.
You know, I mean.
Well, because he's a writer.
Sure.
Exactly.
And I can't think of a lot of artists that would make a damn difference if they. No offense to any
well
artist.
These days, especially.
Especially. No offense. No offense.
Well, no. Say,
but, I mean,
especially
I
Hillary Barda.
Other than like John Cassidy, I can't think of too many artists, and this is no offense to anybody, that would make a huge difference if they did a creator own book because it's not an artist field market anymore.
Well, didn't we kind
really
of go
isn't
through that with Image? Wasn't that?
That
yeah
was the last of it.
That was
mean,
the last.
Well, but it may not be the end of it either. I
yeah
mean,
sure, it could happen
it's
again. It's cyclical.
But that was an artist-driven movement to
sure
start.
Sure. These, days it's not going to be that. Now I don't know about 10 years from now. I don't know 5 years from now. Whatever.
I think writing is
but,
where
I mean,
it's going to be.
Other than Cast Day, I can't think of anybody who, if they decided to create their own book, it would make a major difference.
Well,
they
did all of his hair though. There were some artists, Bronze Age artists, so they kind of missed an opportunity. Like, don't you think if Bernie Wrightson had the image opportunities then?
Oh yeah, goddamn.
You know, I mean that's the thing.
Then, you know, 20 years ago, huge difference. I mean,
yeah,
artists
would be different.
Still have a heat. I mean, now most artists, you execute a book. Nobody really gives too much of a shit. As long as it looks good, they don't care.
But Tim, what's your, you know, now that your foot is in the door at Marvel, there could be a time where you'll be able to get a writing assignment from Marvel, certainly.
Maybe. But, I mean, you're also looking at, like, I mean, the difference so far for me, as a guy who's only done indie books, you know, the difference between me writing a book, the payoff is so far in the future that the payoff between getting a check from Marvel and getting a check 6 months to 2 years later for doing an indie book,
no, the back
really,
end,
do you really think, I mean,
that's
yeah,
true,
the freedom
that's
is nice, but do I, am I really going to be like, wow,
yeah,
that really makes a difference.
You're free when you're living by
check.
The lake in a cardboard box.
Yeah, you too, exactly.
Well, Andrew, you had done comics back in the 90s,
yeah,
and I think that you would like to start doing comics again now. You've got some ideas, got some stuff.
Yeah.
That you were, what, whenever you say, you wake up that first morning and say, you know what, I want to start doing some comics again, was your first inclination to call up Marvel or DC or contact them, or was it to be, here's my creator-owned idea?
Self-publisher. It would be creator-owned. I mean, cause
why?
Because working in the industry, in the video game industry, that's basically other people's ideas right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have something that's more of a personal outlet. And writing is the easiest because you're not sitting there, you know, page or two days for one page and trying to paint it and take another 2 or 3 days. I mean, it's easier to write it, get that creative juice out of you that way. For me, that's the only thing I could really afford right now. And I'll give it to maybe another artist who's, you know, who has the time.
And that's a really good point, too, because as a guy who draws, I can draw and write, whatever, but like to put the commitment in to draw something creator owned, that's ridiculous. That's some work, man. I can write something in a weekend. I mean, and that's not critiquing or criticizing writers. You have a different job. It's a different gig.
Well, that's why some writers can do 4 or 5 or 6 books a month,
right.
And an artist to do like Mike can, like, if you get crunched, you can do 2 in a month.
Right. He can,
but,
yeah, but he's the
I can
I'm
do
about
one.
To die, though.
Yeah, we
I think the average artist does 1 book a month.
Yeah, yeah, we don't like to see Mike when he does
2
months.
Scale that back a bit. Let's put maybe a book and a half.
Book and a half.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I could do a book a month and write a book, but the difference between the commitment, I mean, like, look, I know it's awesome to call out guys and say, hey, writers, you know, make the break. Well, who's going to draw your fucking creator-owned book? That's a really big commitment for these guys to make, because do you really think, I mean, it's awesome, it's a great idea, but at least the first, let's say, you know, you get a guy like Jeff Loeb or whatever to do a creator book, the guy, somebody's got to draw that thing.
Sure.
And this is going to be a guy's month without money.
Yeah,
before
at the
he
least.
Gets, at the least.
Yeah. Well, and Robert admitted to me that he was very fortunate to have a childhood friend in Tony Moore helping him out with Battle Pope and everything. I mean, you know, that
I mean, because the guilt I
it
feel.
It does help whenever you grow up with a guy who has just a scab bit of talent like
Tony. Yeah. But again, this was, you know, the high school Tony Moore.
Sure.
That, you know, that was
before. Mm-hmm. But even like, you know, when like Loaded Bible, now Mike drew that for me, and I've had multiple artists work on the book. The amount of money those guys make compared to what Mike got for working at DC, I feel guilty about it, and I do. When I have people work on creator-owned books for me, I don't take any money. I don't take the money for it.
He told me, hey, you got money for Loaded Bible, and I told him, oh, you could have just not told me. I would have forgot about it.
Right.
You could have just taken me out for pizza.
Yeah, exactly. I would have not known. I wasn't expecting to get money. I didn't think that they paid. You know?
But, I mean, the difference, obviously, that's a huge difference. I mean, it's great to be like, I have this notion of this great idea, and it's totally original, and I'm not poo-pooing on this sort of idea, but you have to be practical, because someone's got to draw that. And if unless you already made a shitload of money, and you're going to pay this guy out of pocket, he's going to wait a couple months to get a check. And in the meantime, you know, I hope he likes ramen.
And
know?
You really do go out of your way, though, because I've seen this from personal experience. Tim Seeley will take money away from himself on projects that are his own.
Sure.
For
but
the
I
creative.
Think you have to. And I would hope that a guy like a Bendis or something who would go on to do it, I mean, obviously he does Powers and stuff, but if he
Because I've heard Kirkman
talent,
does the same thing.
He does.
He just well, gives, through a lot of
gives everything
stuff.
To
sure.
the artist.
But how much when you're offered the challenge of like, hey, make up something or
right.
how many people can go, well, I'm willing, I can do it
I'm willing
I have a day
to,
job.
Yeah, put everything
I can
aside.
Draw, whatever. I'm willing to take
everything.
A couple of months yeah. and like make sure you get all the money because I know it's harder to draw. But I get to own it. I mean,
yeah.
how much of your investment is? I mean,
yeah,
Slash
exactly.
has literally been. It was about 2 years before I made anything
right,
off
right.
it. You know, I mean, that's a 2 fucking years.
Yeah.
I must have written. You know, I must have written 16 fucking.
That's a lot. That's
before.
A lot of Forgotten Realms pages in between.
That I could have done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very practical.
Well, I think what I'm seeing online is that this is unfortunately devolved into a. Mainstream books are good, creator-owned books are bad, or creator-owned books are good, mainstream comics are bad.
Which it
argument.
Should be.
And it's not. That is not the argument.
Yeah, that's not the argument that he's
no.
making.
No,
no, no, no, no.
No,
that,
it's
that is,
misunderstanding.
Yes, that is that is, it's being misconstrued as you know, you're selling out if you do
if
a mainstream
If anything,
books,
I've seen Splinter arguments about what... Because he's making a good argument about... Let us, like us being the independent people, let us do the comics for you guys, and then let the companies
do
the comics for
yeah,
the teenagers.
Which is a
if
great
anything,
idea.
I've seen lots of arguments about
okay.
yeah, what constitutes all ages now.
Right.
Because he in his manifesto says, and I call it a manifesto.
He called it a mission statement, but I like
it. It looks like a manifesto. All it's lacking is somebody pulling a burlap sack off his head.
Oh, yeah, he looks
and had AK-47
in the
background.
Yeah, I mean, if
Seriously.
There wasn't the banjo playing in the background that CBR picked, he's the Unabomber.
Absolutely.
I'm a bomber.
I forgot what I was going to say now.
What constitutes all ages? Books?
But, yeah, he
Which
says,
has obviously changed.
He talks about... You know, Marvel and DC do have all ages books, but they kind of talk down to people.
Yes.
And as somebody that's worked on the all ages books, I have to agree. Because books in the 80s and the 70s were all ages books.
Yes, they were.
But shit happened in those books. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't think a book in the early 80s or the late 70s, you would have to worry about, hey... Don't draw guns in this issue. That is a rule in Marvel Adventures. You
Again,
can't
though,
have guns.
We're also under the Bush administration, which
I
makes
understand.
A huge difference.
It's a different world
yeah.
now,
yeah.
and there's all kinds of crazy rules and stuff. But he's right. Don't talk down to him.
Sure. And one of the statements I thought was
all
profound was the kids know that that's
exactly.
not the real.
Exactly.
Sure.
That's exactly. Just write a real story. Just don't get. Fucking sick.
And there are exceptions.
Like, I mean, us as adults, we demand, we want stuff that's going to challenge us in the way that we, as people that have been reading comics for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
want to be challenged. It's, you just have to do that, but not be as...
Gory or graphic.
Yeah,
but you know, on the other hand, like,
sure.
and this is just, I mean...
You can be as smart as you want to be.
Sure. But it was
Kids
a weird thing.
That.
Sure. And when I was at San Diego, the first time this has happened, I had kids come up to me with Hackslash Books to sign, and I felt bad about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I
then
know.
I realized,
I've seen you do that.
But I realized this is part of the deal.
Yes.
And when I was hiding shit under
yes.
my bed, that was
exactly.
important to my
I read
collection.
American Flag when I was 13.
Right, exactly.
What the fuck?
No, that was... But wasn't that part of what made you enjoy comics is that they didn't treat you
exactly.
Right. You
That's
ran
exactly.
on the secret.
I
yeah.
learned a lot from freaking comic books.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I read this and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I gotta find out.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
I bring this up because I've made no, you know... I don't hide the fact that I think Watchmen's the greatest comic book ever written. I read that when I was like 12 or 13.
I got it when I was 12.
Didn't understand any of it. I just reread it this spring.
But that was the brilliance of Watchmen. We don't need to dovetail off here. But it worked at a surface level.
It worked on so many levels. Yeah, of course. It's genius. I've already said that. It's the greatest comic ever written.
It works for 12-year-olds and 42-year-olds.
Muppets had that humor.
Yeah, it was the Muppets.
I reread it now, and I'm like, oh my God, this fucking thing is amazing.
The pirate story is actually cool.
Yeah, but as a kid, I'm reading it, and I'm like, even if I was reading it as a kid and only thinking, I better pretend I like this because that way I'm cool. Even then, it's still, that's a good reason, you know, because that's what kids do.
That was the realization I made at San Diego when I had a 12-year-old girl come up with the omnibus and say, you know, this is whatever very important to me. I was like, fuck, I felt real guilty. And all of a sudden,
she wasn't dressed like Cassie Hack, but
she was 12. I mean,
then I'd be in trouble.
You'd be on fucking
right. But what I realized is, that kid is recognizing something in the relatability and the fact that it is a little bit edgy. That's really important to this girl. It's important to this girl.
No, and there has to be outlets like that for
you
kids.
You have to have
it. Completely.
It doesn't make you a serial killer. It makes you smarter and cooler than everybody else before your time. It makes you somebody who knows they're, you know, sort of into a club that they look. If you're an outcast in the rest of your life, if you get to have this sort of exclusive club that you feel a part of. No, I mean when I was buying Savage Dragon at 14, 15, and there was an issue with, like, dirty stuff that I knew. I was like, whoa, most of my superhero books don't go here. Yeah. That just meant I had something just for me that I hid under the set.
But what you've done is that here's a 12-year-old girl who hopefully will be a comic book fan for another 20, 30, 40 years.
Sure.
She may not have ever latched on to comic books if it wasn't for Hackslash. That's a book that obviously has its books in it.
I have to believe, and there's a certain amount of this too, mm-hmm. you're now dealing with a multi entry point comic industry.
Yes.
Which is you can get girls that are 12 that came in on manga once they get done with Fruit Basket and they're like, well, I'm kind of an edgier chick. Yeah. I'm 12, 13.
I'm going to the Hackslash, bitches.
Sure, I'm going to check out this. I might check out Buffy. I might check out Hackslash. Look, they might not have come in on, and this is no offense to those books, but they might not have come in on Wonder Woman. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So, yes, in that way, we need the creator on book because we can take risks like that. I can fail miserably if it's just me not having to get paid writing a story that I felt a lot about, but not having to make a shitload of money. If I paid off the colorist and the artist, I'm fucking good. You know? So, yes, that's a risk that we as creator-owned people, that a company like Marvel or DC isn't going to take.
Yeah. And I think Kirkman's point to a large effect is that a book like Hackslash, while it may not be sending, you know, ripples through the comic industry right now, for comics' long-term viability, that book right now is more important to comic books as an industry than Wonder Woman is.
Well, I mean, it's all based on it's. What I would like to believe, and I think we all probably think the same way, is that you know, the important thing is what keeps everything going. Something like a Wonder Woman keeps it going on this front. It keeps it keeps this aspect of it. A book like you know, Scalped, or a book like you know, just like something that is not the standard sort of superhero book, you know, Exterminators or Walking Dead, is introducing readers on a different front. We need the people that still want their Wonder Woman. We need those people.
Yeah, and that's not to discount the importance of Wonder Woman. Gail's work on Wonder Woman is awesome. I love the book.
It's an old character, and it's not that character that has no relevance. That character does have relevance. It has relevance to a certain audience. But we as creator-owned people will take that risk, and though 70% of us will fail miserably, and that's the truth.
Sure.
Maybe 80% will fail.
I said 90-10, quite frankly, and you know, that's usually the creative ratio.
Sure.
You know.
Though we might fail, we're more willing to take risks, and that's important.
But who is Kirkman, honestly, to say to these two main companies, narrow your focus to teens, don't get as edgy as you've gotten. Why can't they reap the benefits that he is asking for the creator owned? It may not be fair, but it's a business market. It's a free market. And also, I don't want my Superman and Wonder Woman stories dumbed down.
But let's say, practically, on a level, let's say those books were back to what they were hypothetically intended to be, would that maybe push some readers to go, well, you know, my Superman is not what it was. Now I'm going to go pick up, you know, American Flag or you know,
You know, what, Tim, I, as someone that's like, honestly,
Invincible,
like a decade older than
sure,
you guys.
Sure, Invincible, yeah.
And I'd really like, you know, Hillary to come back at some point, when out of the penalty box, and see what he thinks too. But I just think older comic book fans in general, because of the way the market has progressed and the way the business has changed, I think just it will naturally happen anyway. Maybe I'm an exception, I don't know.
But I
just very organically, as much as I still enjoy superhero stories, wanted something different and was so pleased in the 90s and 80s when that stuff was out there, and it's only increased.
Yeah.
And really, I keep saying, since 2000, this is a great era for comics.
No,
because
we're probably in the healthiest point we've been in since the 50s or 60s. I mean, realistically.
And
from a
quality standpoint, comics, and I don't think they've ever been this good.
No, I agree. And so many
they haven't been this good and this diverse in a long time. And as much as we complain now, it's like, you know, it's complaining about a bag of riches. And let's be realistic. But could it get better? Yeah.
Well, and that's Robert's point as well. He's saying to the industry, don't pat ourselves on the back yet. Look at our numbers compared to what they were 15 years ago, and certainly decades before.
Well, if you look at the example of what we have now versus what we did have before, we have this huge forum, the internet, and everybody's on there. Everybody's making their opinions known, and you get to see everybody's artwork. And I've noticed this in video games, where you see all this other artwork, the people that aren't even in the industry doing concept work or paintings or whatever, and they're feeding off of each other, seeing this
work. The democratization of
right.
all art forms.
It's really great to see this upsurge of just that kind of talent, and they're all getting together, hooking up with whatever friends.
I don't believe in that,
MySpace,
by the way.
Or whatever. It's because we have to compete with us.
That's right.
Let me have
my job. Get out of my house.
It is a lot tougher. He's bringing up a good point, though. It is a lot tougher.
It's tougher. But it's also
wasn't tough enough. Jesus Christ!
But on the other hand, it's also it's introducing a world where when I was looking for artists for Hackslash, I went on the internet and all the artists I found coincidentally were girls. Okay, all the artists that I was like, this is what I want, were women. Now,
just by coincidence,
it was literally coincidence.
Yeah,
I didn't even know Courtney Vio via the colors was a woman. I had no idea.
Okay.
Her name was like Hellcore CEO. I didn't know. But what that opened up was gender is not an issue because I didn't know.
And more all the time.
It becomes just about, and you get more girls coming into the industry. You get a world that's not such a boys' club because of the sort of accessibility of the internet and the
anonymity
of creators, like what you're talking about. So the ability sort of in the future to, I believe like books like a Hackslash, we have 12-year-old girl readers, partially because I have female creators. Who know sort of how to make the book accessible that I would maybe not know.
Yeah. Very subtly.
This is where we should have Jenny sitting in.
So subtly, yeah. But I mean, I think that's the thing that with a
Scotty
company
Bowman,
like...
Scotty Bowman, wave her in, please.
Well, when you're talking about sort of the big two sort of thing, because there's such an established forum, sort of established way of doing things, you get a lot of dude artists, you get a lot of, like,
wine change.
Sexy girls, you know, whatever. And that's not what the girls are responding to. You know, you definitely get possibilities that you didn't have before. I'm still here waiting, wait for you, girl. I'm still waiting, wait for you, girl. I could wander up the Phoenix, get a good construction job. If the sunstroke, it don't kill me. The methamphetamine will. But I'll still be waiting, wait for you, girl. Jenny Prison.
I'm Jenny Prison.
Hello, Jenny Prison.
Hi.
Are you out of here, Mr. Kadelka?
Yeah, shortly.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Well, thank you.
Always good to see you, buddy.
Nice meeting you guys.
Pleasure meeting you, Andrew. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Good work, man.
Thanks.
Very cool.
Tim was just talking about Hackslash and some of the female creators that have worked on that and how female creators are becoming more and more prominent in the industry. And
especially in creating our own books, I would say.
Yes.
More so than company books. If only because of the sort of the lack of restrictions or sort of styles.
And how that, as maybe an effect of that, is that more female readers may be attracted to books because they see female creators that are involved with them.
Mm-hmm.
Discuss.
I almost
Speaking as a woman.
I might need to take a shot.
The gym game is here.
I'm good. I actually almost feel less able to make a comment on this. I don't know why exactly, but I guess I feel like I don't necessarily feel any sort of fraternity ship or sorority ship when I see a woman writer or artist. I am, and this might be sexist on my part, but I am extra impressed when I see a really solid writer or artist and it's a woman. I'm like, yeah. And that might be a little bit of that, I guess, sorority. But I don't know. I guess it is exciting to see, to say I have a place in this, and that woman has proven it to me.
Are we at a point now where there are probably more female creators in comics than there ever have been before?
Yeah, I mean, well, when a person like Joe Duffy, when you didn't even know she was a girl.
Yeah.
You know, like, when that was such a big deal.
But really, the 40s and 50s, and I don't know Hillary might know, because you know, he knows his history.
Like Ramona Freed.
Get over here,
Hillary. But no, honestly, yeah, Marie Severin,
Marie
Freed.
No, you're a woman in comics.
But still, like, we're just talking about Marie Severin.
Well, there you go. No, is this era currently more dominated by females than ever before, or is that a misnomer? And that really, there are more women creators now than there ever have been, or is that misinformation? And really, you go back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s where there were female editors, writers, colorists, artists.
I wasn't around in the 40s.
No, I know that. but you're hipper to the history than I think the panel is, and that's why.
No, there probably are more women in editorial. I don't know about the creator side. I would imagine that hasn't changed. It's mostly male.
But it's getting, I mean, I think because, like we were talking about, the possibilities of diversity with different genres and manga and things that weren't in existence, you know, when it was all company ruled, the difference being there really is more, I think there is more a possibility for female creators. I mean, in a very practical way, there is a difference between the way that women tend to draw, not all, obviously, but the tendency, the way they draw, the style.
Do you want to say manga?
No, not at all. You're not a manga creator.
Oh, manga,
I'm
sorry.
The manga.
I mean, they're not, but there is a difference in the way that they do things. It's just the way it is.
Well, you look at folks like, you know, Nicola Scott or Pete Guerrero.
Colleen Dorey. Right. It is a difference. Yeah. There just is.
If you didn't know that Why the Last Man was drawn by a woman, by the cover, I don't know if Pia is an extremely popular woman's name, but did you open that and go, oh, I think that's a female artist that did that?
I wouldn't take me long to figure it out.
Really?
Really?
No, and I don't. It's not a criticism at all.
No, but it's interesting.
What about Chicago 1968?
No, I'm glad you said it, Jenny. Because honestly, I didn't know that.
Yours is, but your cover, I could tell. I would have been able to tell.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
There's certain respect, there's a certain difference the way it's done. It's just slightly different.
Does she draw like a girl? Is that what you're saying?
I draw like a man.
It's just a slight difference. There's a
she draws with her chin.
My manly cleft chin.
There's a difference between a Colleen Dorn and a George Perez. I mean, there's a difference between the approach, the sensibility.
I think that, as you were saying earlier, though, that
yeah, there's a difference.
It's a writer-driven market. Or something like, you know, concept writer driven. People are and girl readers, younger readers, they're going to be drawn into by the stories and the characters.
Right.
And if they are written by women, they may be more friendly to young girls.
Sure.
And you're going to get those readers.
Sure.
And I think this is the biggest, most open market I've ever seen. I'm looking around in the store here at all the books on the stands and just on the racks here. Excuse me. And there's more comics by more varied creators than I've ever seen in my life.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know that they're all selling, but that doesn't matter. It's like you throw it against the wall, and if it sticks...
The fact that, right now a girl could walk into this store right here, or that anybody, just a random person, and find something that they might be interested in versus 15 years ago when they walked in here and it was full of only sort of masculine, over sort of sexualized superhero comics, that's a huge coup. Huge.
Sure.
They do need to change the front of the store, though. I mean, it's not, you know, it doesn't welcome
you.
You
want
put Homer Simpson.
More pink?
Well,
maybe some flowers. Pick a
Lisa Simpson doll, maybe, in the window instead of, like, you know, the Punisher or whatever. Yeah.
Well, two things. First of all, and maybe the house inking style back in the 60s, but Maurice Severin's Submariner, I couldn't tell that was done by
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah.
Oh, and no, maybe, again, maybe it was that house inking style
sure,
that maybe.
Sure.
And maybe.
Well, no, it's not a rule. But
oh, no, I understand.
There's, you know.
But the other thing, too, that you just brought up, Hillary, as far as the store not necessarily attracting women, I want to take that a step further because this was another devil's advocate question I brought to Robert, where I said, you're right, you're saying if you do more creator-owned books, people will respond to them and the market will grow. I said, that there's still something, there's a disconnect, though, from distribution and also the individual stores.
I think
being
bookstores,
willing,
bookstores sure. I mean, I don't, and we're in a comic store and I don't want to use that word, but bookstores reach a general reader, not just a, you know, girls, guys, but non-comics readers. They're walking by a rack, there's comics.
Yeah.
How many people walk into comic stores that don't buy comics?
Oh, yeah.
The
right.
first
I mean,
time...
because the Hack-Size Trade sells better than the monthly, which is weird because they've got bookstores.
Actually,
but,
that's
well,
probably
thing, you know?
True for most comics.
Have you
I have heard that the floppies, the monthlies, the pamphlets, people are barely making money on that. Most people aren't.
Sure.
It's all in the collection.
Sure.
It's all in the trades.
And Vertigo is introducing this new original graphic novel line.
The crime line.
And did you see a couple of the covers that have already been online? They look great.
And
they
are book covers.
They are book covers. Exactly. And I really think that is going to be a big change as well. Because I'm telling you, those things are immediately eye-catching, and I'm sure that they will get someone to at least pick it up and look at it. Now, when they open it and see comics,
well,
I don't know where that's going to go, but at least it's going to get someone to look at it.
I think people are interested. I think probably more now than ever before, people are interested.
It's still getting the brain, and we're kind of jaded because we all do it, but it is still getting a non-reader to kind of accept the pictures and words. And
yeah, sure.
Not, you know, I don't know.
Do you guys
that's
ever talk to non-comic book readers and they...
I live with one. It's really
like,
weird.
Well, but I get this. No, but when you give them a comic and they'll say, what do you read first? Do you look at the pictures or do you read
exactly.
the balloons?
Exactly.
You know,
and
they won't
both.
Call them balloons. They'll call them bubbles, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Sure.
And I love that because I'm like, it doesn't matter. And then they're, then they're kind of shaken by that because they thought there was some arcane ritual.
Right. They look at you and go, you just blew my mind.
Or even better, they'll see the art that is now in comics today and they'll go, wow, I didn't know comics were like that.
Right.
Because they're expecting, no offense to these books, but Little Lulu, Archie, and, you know, the standard kind of, or newsprint kind of comic look.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Carmine Infantino, Gil Kane stuff, which is beautiful. It's awesome.
I'm often asked, I do comics, and I'll say, well, don't they do that on computers now?
Right, I actually get that a lot,
too.
They're like, so how do you do that right on the computer then? My mom calls it the email. She doesn't.
The email?
No, do you do that on the email?
But it's, I know, but not on the computer.
Right now.
I love you.
But not
do you
on
do
the
that
computer.
On the email?
My
yeah.
mom says, so do you just scan that right to your email then?
Yes.
Every time.
That's amazing. That's so funny.
Oh, bless her heart.
But I actually just had a conversation with my neighbor yesterday that he was like, so that comic book industry, huh? That's an untouched resource. I mean, people don't even know about that, huh?
Oh, gee, like, yeah.
No, or you hear they're still printing comic books?
Right,
you know,
yeah,
it's that
well,
attitude.
But
sure.
that's gotten less and less ever since, like, you know,
the movies.
Iron Man.
Yeah,
sure. And,
well, this year. This is a...
Well,
and that's why the dialogue is interesting to do now. Because it is... This is a big year.
Well, we were talking about bookstores and drivers to comics, and movies are a big part of that in the bookstores. You talk to Mark here all the time, and I asked him tonight, how much of the movies have they been a big driver of new customers coming in and looking for stuff?
Not at all.
He said Iron Man a little bit, Batman not really at all, because everyone already knew who Batman was. Iron Man was a new commodity for just pop culture, so he said, a few people coming in looking for Iron Man stuff. I think Watchmen is going to be huge. It's already the number two.
Well, you know what's really interesting, to point something out here, in talking to a couple of comic retailers, because I went to
a big chain this weekend for a sign-in and stuff, and they pointed out something I thought was really fascinating. Movies didn't drive the sales of Iron Man or Batman, but it sent Wanted through the roof.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? When a person who doesn't read comics walks into a comic store and says, I really fucking love that movie, what do I buy? And you look at Iron Man, and they go, shit, there's a wall of fucking Iron Man.
Oh, yeah.
This is from 1962. I don't know what the hell this is.
Yeah.
Hulk, I don't know.
Where's number one?
This is a goddamn alternate take. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wanted? One goddamn book.
300.
You take that book, you walk
Watchmen.
Out, you Road just got
Watchmen.
Watchmen, one book. And I've actually had that as an effect on Hack Slash, in that there's no alternate takes, there's not 60 years of continuity. The Omnibus was the best-selling things I've ever done, because people were like, oh, it's going to be a movie, I'm excited to check it out. It's one book.
Yep.
One book makes all the difference.
And another wrinkle of Kurt McCrimmon's argument, that the big two are too wrapped up in continuity.
Right,
and
it it's too hard to reach these people who are like, wow, I was really impressed by that movie, where do I go? Well, I've got 30 trades here for you, or 40 or 50, and oh wait, here's an alternate take, here's a different universe, here's Ultimate. They have no idea what this shit means.
Think X-Men.
Exactly.
You go see the movie, you enjoy the movie, you pick up a comic, and you go, what
where am
in the
I?
Hell? Who
yeah.
are these people?
Sure,
what's
yeah.
going on? They're referring to things that don't, you know.
That mean nothing. No,
but once you
right.
go, I liked this, here you go.
Well,
that was it.
There's a good argument why people, and anyone listening that goes into, wants to buy comics based on seeing a movie and doesn't know what to do, that's why you go to a comic book store. I mean, I love bookstores, they're great for everything, but when you go into a comic book store, the person behind
sure.
the desk knows what's
well,
in that store,
should.
And they can
not
point
that all
out
stores
exactly.
Should. Is,
should. Not all stores
Mark
are
does a good job here, but not, yeah, but
not
yes.
all stores
yeah, ideally, that would be the
right.
case.
Right.
We're
yeah.
jaded in Chicago. There are so many great stores, and Mark's is...
Oh, we're spoiled. We're spoiled.
If you were to mention any of the other stores...
No, that's Georgia.
No, exactly. And again, that was the point. That's the point I made to Kirkman as well.
In my hometown, go back to Wausau, Wisconsin, where I'm from.
Wausau, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
But literally,
Hillary's impressed for the
they
first time tonight.
They don't have, they don't have any comic. They just got a comic store. Now, for 10 years, they didn't have a comic store. So when those people, talk about not knowing where to go. Look, they didn't even have 10 years of possibility to buy books. They just are suddenly coming in. All of a sudden, there's a comic store. There's some books at fucking Walden Books. What do you do? What do you pick up? It's just that is why Kirkman's argument that it is actually more beneficial to create. He's right.
Yeah.
That is true, because though the longevity of these characters, the longevity of a character like Thor, the longevity of a character like Superman is a bonus in the comic industry in the monthly. It's a bane to the trade paperback.
Sure.
Bane.
And I think
Bane can kick Bonus's ass.
That's a band name right there. Bonus versus Bane.
I think this is a very important.
I'll break your bonus.
Oh,
that's
terrifying. Is Bane.
This is, I think, very, very, very timely to both what's going on in the comic industry and Kirkman's message, and that's movies right now. And right now we're at a high point of superhero genre comic book movies. Iron Man, Hulk, it's
but don't forget
Batman. So we have all of these superhero movies that are rolling out. Now they may continue. Well, Hillary and I were talking about this earlier. They may continue to make a couple superhero movies a year for 20 more years, whatever. But we're certainly at a high point. We're not going to have another year like we had this year. Okay. Eventually, that gravy. I don't think.
Well,
we'll have
another year of exposure.
No, we really don't know.
Question of quality.
Superheroes is a genre, right?
It is a genre.
It defines comics
right.
for a lot of people,
yeah.
but it's a genre. And when it comes to movies, that's what most people think of as comic movies.
Well, when it comes to comics, a lot of people don't understand the difference between comics versus superheroes.
Sure,
right.
sure.
So there is.
When Ghost comes out, or Wanted comes out.
History of Violence.
Art School Confidential.
Yes.
There's a variety of film. Persepolis was
a big art movie hit.
So, and a great comic.
Absolutely.
This is outside of the superhero
and
genre.
And that's
obviously.
My point, and I think Kirkman's point is that...
Bringing it back.
Is that the superhero genre may tail off, but comics are a medium, not a genre.
Right.
And creator-owned books can continue to fuel the movie and TV industry into infinity.
Yeah.
And so if a guy like like Bendis, should he be spending his time on a book like Avengers, which he may. I'm not saying yes or no, but I think the point is, should he be spending his peak creative time on a book like Avengers, or should he be working on a creator-owned project that is going to have its own longevity after that?
Well, Brian already has an HBO deal brewing, and I have a feeling it has nothing to do with anything he's doing right now in Marvel. So I think Brian specifically as an example.
But on the other hand, the problem I always have with that, of course, is, well, then are you doing creator-owned comics just as a movie pitch? Are you setting something up?
And here's another guy that also is basing most of his comic work in the mainstream, Jeff Johns. Jeff's working with the Robot Chicken guys. He's got a lot of movie ideas brewing. I mean, and Jeff is a guy who came from film, working for Richard Donner, into comics. I mean, it was Warner Brothers saying, hey, kid, you seem to know a lot about our comic books. Would you like to pitch us a story?
Sure. I don't think that there's any one hard and fast rule.
Comic books? I'm Jimmy DC. Nice to meet you. Gladiator movies?
I would love to think that every comic book creator out there is like, I want to come up with my own creator-owned project because I want it to help grow comics and be good for the industry and for the medium. It's not going to be like that, but...
Well, you hate to see the flood of, like, I want to do a creator-owned book because I want to sell it as a movie. You hate to see things like, well, I couldn't give a fuck less about continuing this book. Look, I could have done, you know, like, I try to really live by what I say. I could have done Hack Slash, sold the movie rights, and just abandoned that shit and tried to sell something else. But, you know...
You're better.
I'm too anal and too stubborn.
You like the story, that's
sure.
cool.
And I think if you continue it, you also help.
If you're anal, you don't want to abandon that shit. I mean, it's kind of a contradiction if you do. Sorry.
I hate Hillary Barta.
In the sense. Hillary wins.
That's Bane kicking Bonus's ass, man.
Shootsy scores.
I'm going to go home.
It's the cheap.
But I think you want to make sure that you don't have people just spinning out things as a Hollywood pitch machine, because then you actually do damage to the industry by showing retailers that you're asking them to support their pitches.
Yeah.
Which is to say, I don't give a shit about what you want to read. I want you to buy this stuff so that I can pitch it and then get some cash. I don't care how invested you were. Eat a dick. You know, whatever. that's what I don't want to happen.
And the award for colorful language goes to...
But I don't want that to be what would become. So we need to have some kind of middle ground where it says, you do things, you make your things because it's about you being able to control the thing, but you don't just spin out a bunch of crap because you're like, you know, it did a lot of money? Epic movie, what a piece of crap, but fucking people went to saw it. I'm going to do...
But can't you see those comic books coming from a mile away, Tim? I mean, honestly, but that's what I'm saying. I think people and readers can see, okay, this is a failed pitch versus, hey, this is a real, this is a story unto itself.
There's a big gray area. We were talking about this off mic. But, you know, it's like you've got art and commerce, and you have, you know, I mean, who can match their vocation and their avocation, right? It's the toughest thing to do.
Your dream and your paycheck. How can you make those parallel?
And we're closer than most people by working in a creative field, right? Even if you're working on a character for a company you don't like, for a boss you hate, an editor who doesn't give a crap about the art form, you know, and doesn't care about your values and all that stuff, you're still drawing comics. You're still ahead of the game.
And as soon as you complain about that, I mean, you go home, you complain to your wife or something, and she goes, you know what I did today? I took calls from some asshole who couldn't figure out how to, like, send in a magazine subscription.
Eat a dick.
That's where I came from. Your wife has the filthiest mouth.
I'm at Kinko's, and I'm making copies of a book before I, you know, slip it in FedEx and send it off. And the guy next to me is like, is that comics? And then you have that conversation, like, oh, man, you know, I wanted to draw. I used to draw in high school. I always wanted to do that. And the guy tells you what he's doing.
The sob story.
And
you feel bad. He's a security guard or whatever. But on the other hand, then you have that thing where you don't want people to take advantage of you because you are doing something you love, where it's like...
How the industry was built.
Right.
Yeah. Exploitation of talent.
Right.
Right.
And you want to do this so bad, you'll do it for nothing, you leave wiener. Because, you know, like, you don't want to be working at Burger King.
Eat a dick, you wiener. I'm just trying to work with the thematics here.
We need to work on Sealy's diet, don't we? Okay. There's a whole world of food groups for you, Tim.
Cock is my only food group.
Non-dick-a-layer.
Shish, Tim, just don't get anal about wieners, because that's going to be trouble.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
Hell.
No.
Jenny's like, yeah.
No, I'll punch yeah. it in prison. What have you done?
I went there.
Jenny's like, stop.
Well, we started in prison, so,
can
you know.
Can I go home with you? This is great.
he's just a block away.
Excellent. Will you tell me funds all day?
Party at my house.
Okay, back to point. Someone was making
I totally
point.
Lost whatever.
No, I think what it comes down to is just make the best comics that you can, whether they're mainstream right. books or creator-owned books, and that's it's gonna find its way out in the wash. I think I don't doing one or the other is not good or bad. It's not the end of the story. I think good comics are always going to be good comics, and if you're doing them for the right reasons, that's what
right.
it's about.
And that even brings us back to last week when we talked about. Sean Murphy and how that book allegedly, which I couldn't prove this, but I don't think it did good, first off, because it was a creator-owned book. But good comics always kind of rise to the surface and help
absolutely.
You. If you're putting something good out there, you have to be prepared to take a long time to get any sort of recognition, but when you do...
Yeah, if you you have to be expecting to suffer. And I would just hope that... I mean, I hope when Robert painted a very pretty picture, he also said... There's a good possibility that you will really suffer and it'll suck ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a growth period, you mean, or in terms
I,
of your art?
I just think you have to expect... Look, if you do something directly for Marvel or DC, here's the upside. Oh, that sweet paycheck was awesome. And you don't necessarily deal with this didn't go over that well, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily deal with it. When you make a creator-owned book, if it fails... It's only on you.
Sure.
And you have to deal with that.
There's
that's
the other,
something that sucks.
There's the other interesting wrinkle, though, and that is the people that are now joining DC and Marvel that have been, like, sweating their creator-owned books and talking to Remender and
Rick,
everything
yeah.
the other day. Yeah. He's like, you know, I'll hear comics and stuff, and it's like, oh, wow, man, you know, that's really cool. You're brand new to comics and stuff. And
yeah.
it's like, no,
oh,
man.
I need that
and
all
Bendis,
the time.
And, yeah. yeah, exactly, yeah. Tim. Yeah. No, you do. Mike, obviously. Everybody, yeah. Hill. I can't imagine how many years, you know, before you broke through for Christ.
When you're always
I was
like,
lucky.
See yourself yeah. as newcomer,
but
like,
yeah, exactly. You know that you're treated as a newcomer by mainstream fans.
If you get old enough, you're a newcomer again.
That's yeah, what no,
I'm
yeah.
saying. Yeah. I'm like,
no, but yeah. it's oh, me. Well. I mean, the editors at Marvel are young enough; they have no idea I worked there for 20 years.
There
so,
you go. But I remember you know. Too Bill Willingham's success with Fables and stuff, and
yeah.
they're like this cool
right.
new guy, Bill Willingham,
yeah.
and it's like, oh yeah, you mean
Elemental?
Exactly,
Bill Willingham from 1985,
or Jim Owsley, who became Christopher Priest and you know
yeah,
reinvented
sure,
himself
sure.
and found.
I'm waiting
career.
For Hillary to be in one of Marvel's Young Guns.
You need yeah exactly yeah who would, like yeah Arthur Stoydom was a young gun.
Yeah that's amazing.
It's just like,
no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. In that first wave they referred Arthur as one of the Young Guns and it's
oh,
like come, like oh, who are you kidding? I remember Arthur years ago.
Yeah, I'm more like an
and
old decrepit bazooka.
Well,
you need a snappy new name.
Well, I tell you what, let's do another line change, and we're going to talk about a new creator-owned book. So, Eric, come on over.
Are we going to talk about the Roberts?
Yeah.
Because I was looking at the promo card for the Roberts, and the tagline here is two serial killers, one retirement home, and I laughed for about 5 minutes. And literally, I was crying laughing. So it got me. Good job.
We're joined by Eric Rose, who is the artist of The Roberts, which is a new series from Image Shadowline. So, Eric, first of all, thanks for dropping by.
Sure.
You took us up on the drop-by challenge.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, good.
So
good for you.
Drop by, yes.
I'm sorry. In advance. Tell us a little bit about The Roberts.
Okay. Well, The Roberts is two 48-page... or two issues, 48 pages each, black and white,
mm-hmm.
Coming out from Shadow Image Line. And the premise is the Boston Strangler and the Zodiac Killer live in the same retirement home. Most people know that the Zodiac Killer was never caught. Some people have doubts as to whether or not the Boston Strangler was actually Albert DeSalvo or whatever. So this book is a premise written by Wayne Shinseng about
two serial killers that live in a retirement home.
Yeah.
And hilarity ensues?
It's more of a black comedy, yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, so it actually is a comedic book?
Yeah, there's some humor to it. There's some darkness to it. There's a little bit of everything. Wayne, before, has written books for Image, like Heaven LLC, which was what if, like, Heaven was a corporation and Jesus goes on the lam and they have to go chase him down. He did Bad Ideas with Jim Mahfood and Dave Crosland.
Oh, awesome.
Was basically talking about all the weird things that happen in comics that nobody blinks an eye about. And so this is more of a serious slant, and it kind of goes along with a lot of, like, the conversations that we have when it gets really late at night about, wow, what would happen if, you know,
the Zodiac killer
was still out there, and what if we just passed him when we were going to visit your grandma at the retirement home?
I know we have artist Jenny Frizen here doing a quick art critique here for you.
Through. It's nice.
This is very pretty stuff, isn't it?
Thank you.
I wouldn't call it pretty. I'm terrible at describing artwork. How would you describe your style?
I think definitely for this book, it was more of a realistic approach to it. I think you can definitely see a lot of my influences in there. There's a little bit of Jay Lee in there. There's mm-hmm. some Lee Bermejo in there. There's always a little bit of Tim Bradstreet in there. I can't seem to shake that.
Hey, that's okay.
But, yeah, I definitely wanted to do something a little bit more realistic, really get the wrinkles and all that kind of stuff into it, which once you get onto, like, you know, page 15, you're like, oh, why the hell did I do this to myself? just more of a realistic approach, just so you kind of get the idea of retirement home. It's a lot of old guys talking.
A lot of wrinkles, man. A lot of wrinkles. Yeah. Now, you guys are doing this as 248 pagers.
Uh-huh.
Why? First, what's the cover price going to be on that?
It's $5.99.
Okay.
They're in prestige format, so just like the Dark Knight, the original Dark Knight Ooh. Returns. Like,
so it's got to be good.
It's got to be good. It's the same size.
This is printed in black and white.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I've seen more and more stuff coming out prestige format. I love that. Uh-huh. One of the reasons, and I'm a dork about this, yeah. is because it does fit on the bookshelf well, and it fits right in with your trades.
And you can always find it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you've got that spine to go by.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was really excited when I found it.
So it's kind of like a trade, but not really.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to go with the larger format and the prestige?
Really, it was just kind of an economic issue.
Hey there, folks. As you can tell, we are starting to have some technical difficulties at the end of this episode, but we're already running very long on the episode, so it may have been a blessing in disguise. I'm sure that we'll have Eric back on the show soon to talk about The Roberts. It's going to be hitting shelves on August 27th, so make sure and check that out. It looks great and sounds like a really cool, fun, dark comedy, so look for The Roberts coming to a local comic shop near you. One of the announcements that we missed was talking about Jenny Frizen and Lynn Cody's fantastic webcomic, Chicago 1968. It's a fantastic ongoing web series about one of the most important years in our nation's history and Chicago's history in particular. So you can check that out at webcomicsnation.com. Basically do a Google search for Chicago 1968 comic, and it comes up in several places, including being featured at the Image Shadow Line site right now. So we're going to jump right back into the conversation, talking a little bit about Munden's Bar, which is Hilary Barta and Jason Millay just did an issue for that at comicmix.com. Go check that out. And another big thanks to everyone that showed up at Dark Tower last Friday. It was a really fantastic night just hanging out with folks. A lot of people that you didn't even hear on this episode hanging out at the comic shop, talking about the medium that we love and having an all-around good time. So it was really awesome to see that happening, and hopefully it will not be the last time. So let's jump back into the conversation, wrap this one up, and thanks for dealing with the technical difficulties here.
Comedy, what they done?
I was going to talk about the pages of Hawkman art that was in the bucket of studs.
Okay, let's move on.
That's all right, but I like your story better.
Mike Norton, you can find each month in the pages of Green Arrow and Black Canary, and you got some Trinity stuff coming up as well, correct?
I think next week, actually.
All right, awesome.
And Mike Norton rules. Woo!
Yes, he does.
Shut up, all of you.
Ow!
We want to see Mike Norton drawing like Mike Norton.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
I want to thank everyone who has dropped by the iTunes music store to give us a review, including Wendell, Edwards, 8, my buddy Wood, Joe Patrice, Jimbo Art Guy, Shaky H, and Brash Karen. So thank you, folks. More of those
aren't real names.
I know they're not. I know. It's a great way to help support the show, so go leave an iTunes music review. Andy Parks is blogging now.
What?
Yes, he is.
Now?
Andy has an awesome blog. It's at andyparks.blogspot.com.
Andy spelled with a...
Andy spelled with an E. It's A-N-D-E.
It's all about swanky hats.
It's about Kansas City BBQ.
Oh, well.
It's actually about fantastic artists that a lot of folks today may have forgotten about or aren't familiar with. It's all... his blog post is based on a single panel scanned from his private art collection, and basically a story about that artist or what made them great, inking techniques, all sorts of cool stuff. So it's not just an entertaining blog, it's also very educational for people that want to learn about
something.
Some great artists. He had
tasty medicine, kids.
He had a John Buscema. He had a John Buscema panel from A Savage Sword of Conan that was fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he went and talked. It was great. So check out Andy's blog. Hillary Barta and Jason Molloy, we talked about Munden's Bar, Comic Mix. We just talked about the Roberts.
Well, the Roberts has got the funniest tagline in comics. Two serial killers, one retirement home. How could you not buy it?
There's a 10-page preview. On ericrose.com, ericrose.com. First 10 pages of the first issue.
All right, and release date once again?
August 27th.
August 27th. That's all right. Tom versus the JLA, I think, is winding down. Tom versus the Flash is going to be winding up, so look for that. I'm on 11 o'clock comics every week on either Thursday or Friday, whenever Vince gets done editing. Yes.
198 podcasts online. 198 podcasts. You take one down, or actually, you add one on. And next week, it's 191
passes.
You get the idea.
Yes. I write a weekly column at ifanboy.com. iFanboy is another podcast, Hillary.
Do you want to sing some more?
There's more?
Yes.
What, am I talk a lot or something?
Go to ifanboy.com. Check out Comic Shots each Thursday morning for a drink and comic book recommendation.
Thanks
Not
for the whiskey,
drinks
Chris.
In the morning like you.
Huh?
Nothing.
Oh, everyone drinks.
Thanks
in the morning.
For the whiskey and beer, Chris.
Oh, you're very welcome.
No.
We've got to finish this off before you go. All right, I'd like to thank everyone, and that is a big, big thank you list. So, everyone that was here tonight,
Yay.
Thank you so much. Woo-hoo. We'll be back again next week with, I believe, our 199th episode.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man, that's almost momentous. It's the penultimate episode.
Very nice. We got to leave on that one. All right, everyone, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday. In the meantime...
In between time.
Hey, somebody got it. We'll be everywhere in...
And around.
Coming. You do great voices, though.
Good day, Mom.
Hang a left on the high road. See where it takes you, see where you take it, take it high, take it low, with caution to the wind, and a drive on wedding bow, take it on to level it out, smoke beats water anyhow.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions around comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.